Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is your weekly look at the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective, whether it's accessible, inaccessible, or you know, somewhere in between. And we always want to hear from you. As we always say, it's your programme, so do get in touch with us. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send us a voice message or just a good old-fashioned written email as well. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing more from Dave's conversation with Drew Mochak, technical specialist at WhatsApp. We'll be telling you about the latest additions to the RNIB shop, and Hubert Pavalkovich will be along with the first in a series of tutorials on using Narrator on Microsoft Windows. Doesn't quite get as much love as it deserves, Narrator, so looking forward to hearing that. Speaking of Hubert, here he is. How's it going?
Well, going good. Yes, you've got an absolute point there, I think. Narrator's not been given enough attention. I mean, built-in screen readers in general, I think, need to be pointed out a bit more. Hence the series project. But yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. No, I think you're right. It used to be a bit of a, in the nicest way possible, it used to be a bit of a joke to Narrator in that it was kind of the screen reader that you'd use to get yourself another screen reader.
Pretty much. But,
it's got a lot better in Windows 10 and massively improved in Windows 11. I'm loving those natural voices that you can get on there.
They are amazing. I've been to a Microsoft store last year for a job and I've tried them voices, and the guy voice, I think the name is, I was absolutely blown away by how good it is, and especially at 100% speech rate, where a lot of natural voices tend to fall away and sound really horrible. This one didn't.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. Anything else new with you? What else is on grabbing your attention this week?
I mean, you can tell how exciting my life is with this. I found an accessible-ish farming game for the iPhone, and that's sadly probably one of my main highlights of experimenting with technology, that and line-in cables. And I thought the farming game probably is a lot more exciting since I do like my gaming rather than cables.
Yeah, fair enough. So what game is it?
It's called Farm RPG, and it's a web-based app client. And so basically it looks like a website. And the developer apparently is working on accessibility, and it has improved. And it's just quite interesting because it's the one game a lot of the blind community were asking for many, many years. So it's exciting for the people that wanted that sort of game to be around.
There's something else that I wanted to bring up with you as well, because we mentioned this really briefly last week, but then sort of moved on to it. This, what is going on with this Twitter rebrand to X? I think you know a bit more about this than me.
Well, not much else to say really, apart from Elon Musk wants the Twitter rebranded. It's kind of, it's an X. And well, so far, your tweets are just called posts, I think.
Right? Posts,
X's,
yeah.
Which, thank goodness, because that was not sounding great. I mean, there are many cynical theorists out there who have all sorts of speculations. I mean, the thing with branding is, whether we like it or not, it's here to stay. So it's one thing we have to get used to. Seeing X on my phone instead of Twitter is still weird.
I think what's making me chuckle every time I scroll past the X icon is, you know, VoiceOver tries to do that. If you've got the image descriptions on, it tries to do that. Tries to provide a little description of images. Mm-hmm. And now when I scroll past X, it says X and then possibly close. Like VoiceOver's telling me not to go on Twitter.
Basically, ignore it. Don't use it.
Don't use it. Just close it. Shh. Well, Dave is taking a well-earned week off this week, hence why he's not on hosting duties. So you've got us two keeping you company and doing our best to keep things running for the next hour or so. So stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Well, it's that time again when we check in with RNIB's Products for Life store that sells a range of accessible products, tools, games, aids for blind and partially sighted people. These are products that have been tested by blind and partially sighted people. They come with accessible documentation in audio, braille, large print, and any profits are reinvested into the work of RNIB. And the shop often has new technology products. And to talk about three of the most recent additions, we are joined, as ever, by senior product developer Claire Maxwell. Hello, Claire. Did I get your title right?
I'm product manager, but almost right, Dave. It'll do.
Well, welcome back to R&IB Connect Radio. We've got a nice little selection here. We're going to be talking about things that beep and talk and magnify. So hopefully a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah, so beeping and talking and magnifying. Let's start with the last one, shall we? The magnifying, which is an all-singing, all-dancing magnifier that I want to talk to you about today. So it's called the Luna S. And I'm sure that some people listening to this have actually had its predecessor, which was the Zoomax Snow. This is an upgraded version of that. So it's a nice handheld portable magnifier. It's got a 4.3-inch screen, but small but mighty, right? Because it's from 2 times magnification right up to 19 times magnification. But what I really like about this new version is it's got some really nice handy features on it. And I think one of them is voice activation. So instead of just being able to press buttons to be able to magnify and zoom in on your images, you could also use your voice just to change the color, for example, to take that picture, to zoom in. So you can do all of that just with your voice as well. So that's a really handy feature of this product.
Right, because when you're magnifying, sometimes if you've got to start fiddling around with buttons and moving your hands about, then sometimes you can inadvertently move the magnifier and then lose your place. So I guess the idea here is that by controlling it with your voice, you can then keep the magnifier absolutely where you want it to be.
Absolutely, that's exactly it. So I think that's a really nice feature of this product. And one of the other features of the product as well is that it can be used as a flashlight, a torch. So if you've got your magnifier out and about with you on its handy wrist strap, for example, and you're coming home late at night or whatever, you can't quite make out where your lock is on your door, whatever, you can whip out your magnifier stroke torch and light up your way as well. So it's a really nice feature of this.
Perhaps less important at the moment while we're in the summer, but maybe as we get into those sort of, you know, autumn months and the nights start drawing in, then maybe useful there as well. And I guess if you've dropped something as well on the floor in a dark area, would the torch be good enough for that, do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. So not necessarily maybe because the light nights are still with us, aren't they? So for the next few months, but definitely for finding things, if you drop them on the floor, be really handy. And one final feature I just want to point out of this magnifier, although it does do magnification as well, of course, but one final feature is that it does have built-in FM radio. So if you're sitting on the bus or on the train or whatever it is, and you've popped it away because you no longer need it for magnifying, you can also plug in some headphones and listen to your favourite station on your journey.
Wow, incredible. Well, so there we go. So the portable handheld Luna S magnifier, torch and FM radio. Amazing, right? Okay. So let's move on then, Claire. Can I talk with you about power banks? Because these, of course, everyone has one now. You know, when your phone battery starts running perilously low, and I guess that magnifier we just talked about, you know, case in point, everything now has batteries, doesn't it? And so often it's helpful to have a spare to be able to recharge those mobile devices, not just phones, tablets as well. But sometimes the power bank itself, it's not always clear how much power is remaining in the power bank. That's been a bit of an accessibility barrier for us as blind and partially sighted people.
Absolutely. It's one of my biggest bugbears. I mean, I have to say, I've got many, many different types of power banks. And it just doesn't quite cut it because you just don't know how much battery you've got left, whether it is charging, etc., etc. So these power banks, we've got two versions. We've got a 10 milliamp hours and a 20 milliamp hour version of these accessible power banks. And the great feature about these two power banks is that it can give you an audio, so a beep, or a vibration to indicate that it's charging, to indicate how much charge is on your battery, and to indicate whether it's on or off as well. So I think it's really, really handy. Not just that, but it also has some really helpful tactile markings next to each of the ports as well, so you know which are the correct ports. So it's got one dot, for example, or two dots to indicate whether it's input or output ports as well.
Ah, yeah, that's not always clear as well. And of course, all of those features are tactile. So, you know, the tactile dots and the, you know, the little vibrations, little haptic feedbacks. I mean, you know how passionate I am about Braille, and I recognise that not everybody's a Braille reader, but I think sometimes we underestimate the value of tactile feedback, especially for somebody who maybe also experiences hearing loss, right?
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking too. So if you have hearing loss, you can still use this and get the same functionality out of it. So you can have it in vibration mode and it gives you exactly the same feedback, and you've got, obviously, as you mentioned already, the tactile elements too.
Brill. Okay. And finally, let's talk about medication, because I know many of us have to take medication. Sometimes that can be related to your eyesight, and sometimes other issues as well. And, you know, maybe if you struggle to remember or you need reminding, we've got something that might be able to help with that.
Yeah. So the Verbalize talking reminder clocks. This is a really handy small but mighty keyring clock. And the idea behind this is that you can take it on your travels, take it out and about with you. It is a keyring, so you can clip it onto your keys, and it comes with a little keyring chain as well as a carabiner. So you could even clip it onto your bag if you wanted to. And it's got nice high contrast as well. So for anyone who has got some residual vision, it's got two sides to it, actually. It's got on the front, it's got a black surface with a large oval-shaped white button and small rectangular screen. And then on the back, it's the opposite of that. So it's a white surface with black buttons that really stand out. It's nice, it's small, and as I said, mighty, because it can have up to 8 different alarms set all at the same time. And I was saying about travelling, so if you are travelling abroad, you know, particularly at this time of year, I'm thinking if you're going on your summer holidays, you don't particularly want to lug along a huge clock or anything in your luggage with you. So this is really handy. Take it with you on your travels as well.
So there we are, the Lunar S portable magnifier, torch and FM radio. The accessible power banks with audio and haptic feedback and other tactile features as well, and the Verbalize talking alarm, which goes on your keyring. Really high contrast, easy to see. Claire, how do we find out more about these products and keep up to date with other new items being added to the shop all the time? Because I know you're always busily doing that.
We are. So it's always worth a look on our shop. So you can go along to rnib.org.uk/shop and have a look. And we do have different categories on there. So we tend to put all of our new products into the new category page right at the top, so they're easy to find. If you also want to sign up to the new product guide, you can do that. So we send out a new product guide in Braille, audio or print, and that comes out about 4 times a year. And we do have a bumper edition coming out for September, just ahead of Christmas, and a follow-up one in October, just to give you a bit of a tantalising look at what's coming ahead.
And if you're not comfortable with the web, everything is available over the phone as well?
Of course, yeah. You can ring up our really helpful team, so the helpline on 0303 123 9999, and they'll be really happy to help you as well. If you're not comfortable placing your orders online, they can do that over the phone for you.
Claire Maxwell, Senior Product Manager with RNIB's Retail Products Team. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for inviting me again.
If you're an Apple Watch user, chances are you've heard of or even made use of Siri, which is Apple's virtual assistant. And Siri works really well on the watch for things like, you know, making calls and responding to messages and setting alarms. But it does have a few limitations, a few quirks, particularly on the Apple Watch. And it's not quite as smart, in my experience, as some of the other, quote, smart assistants out there. What I wanted to show you today, I discovered a handy little app called Voice in a Can. I know, strange name, but bear with me. It's called Voice in a Can, and what it allows you to do is add the functionality of Amazon's Alexa voice assistant to your Apple Watch. And just on that note, actually, before we go any further with this, because of the nature of what I'm going to be showing you, because of, you know, this demo, I will be saying the A word quite a bit, the wake word that's the default for many of the Amazon Echoes. So if you're near a smart speaker, you might just want to tap that mute button and just have it muted, have the microphones muted for a few minutes, just to save your smart speaker triggering. This app allows you to add, as I said, add Alexa to the iPhone, but more importantly for me, the Apple Watch, because there is an Amazon official, Amazon like first party app for the iPhone. So you can get pretty much full-featured Alexa functionality on there, but not on the Apple Watch. So this is what Voice in a Can aims to give you. Now, because of a few limitations with both Apple and Amazon, it's not fully featured, so don't get too excited. It's not a full-blown Amazon Echo on your wrist. From the Apple side, you can't replace Siri with this. So when you're holding your digital crown, it's always going to trigger Siri. But there are some ways to add little shortcuts to it, which I'll show you in a minute before we actually get started with what it can do. You can add it to your watch face, though, and I believe on the Apple Watch Ultra, I don't have one of these, but I believe on the Apple Watch Ultra, there is a side button, there is an action button, and you can assign that to open the Voice in a Can app and start Alexa listening to you. So there are a couple of handy little shortcuts you can do. And also, you have to go into the app for it to start listening. So it's not like an Amazon Echo where it's constantly listening for that word. It's not constantly listening for a wake word, because again, Apple Watch apps can't do that. And in terms of the Amazon side, it can't do the communication features. So you can't do announcements and calls and drop in and things like that. But most of the things you can do, things like timers, reminders, smart home control, calendar, that's a big one that I use it for. So I'm not going to go through authorizing the app because that might change, but the app talks you through it. You basically go to the Amazon website. The app will give you a code to put in. So you go to the Amazon website on a separate device, so maybe on your iPhone, launch Voice in a Can on your Apple Watch. That will tell you where to go on the Amazon website, and it will give you a 6-digit code. So you just put that in, agree to the terms and conditions and stuff, and then it's all registered to your account. So as I said, it's not constantly listening. So the best thing that, in my experience, unless you've got the Ultra and you want to map it to your action button, the best thing that you can do is add it to your watch face, which I'll show you how to do. You can do this on the watch itself, but just for the sake of speed and for the sake of better audio quality for a few seconds, I'm going to do this on the iPhone. So if I take my phone here and unlock it,
12:49, FaceTime.
And then we go to the Watch app.
Watch. Watch. All watches. Button.
So we're in the My Watch tab by default, and I'm just going to look for the watch face that I use. I use the modular watch face.
Modular. On. Multicolor.
And double tap on that.
Callum's Apple Watch. Back button.
I'm now going to turn my rotor to headings, just so we can... We don't really need to worry about all the background colours and icons and all that kind of stuff, so we'll navigate by headings to skip all of that.
Words, headings, modular, heading, colour, multicolour, background, heading, complications, heading.
And this is what we want, complications. Now, I'm going to have my Voice in a Can on the bottom left, so let's have a look for that option.
Top left, Red. Orange. Background. Complications. Top left. Date. Friday. Middle. Condition. Bottom left. Transit. Button.
There's the bottom left, so we'll double tap on that. I don't really need the transit complication there. So I'm going to replace it with the voice in a can one. So let's double tap.
Analog time.
And then again, we can navigate by headings to find the voice in a can heading.
Timer. Heading. Tips. Heading. Transit. Voice in a can. Heading.
And then there's a couple of options here. These are mainly just for how the complication looks and, you know, what it looks like. So I'll just show you these if you're interested.
Traditional. Microphone. Nolly. More. Button.
I don't really know what that last one means, I'll be honest, but I'll just go with the traditional one.
Nolly. Micro. Traditional.
What's that?
Color. Multicolor. Heading. Callum's app. Module. Share. But Callum's Apple Watch. All watches. Button.
And now that's done. That's added that to my watch face, or at least it should have done. So we can put the iPhone to one side now. We don't need that. And if I now unlock my Apple Watch.
1251.
And tap on the bottom left of the watch face.
Voice in a can.
There it is.
Available.
There's the voice in a can option. And as soon as I double tap that, the Lady A assistant will start listening to me. So what I find sometimes happens is when Alexa responds to you, VoiceOver can start talking over it as well and it goes a bit quiet. So what I recommend is place VoiceOver's focus on this and then just do a three-finger double tap to turn off the speech. So I'll do that now.
Voice in a can. Actions. Speech off.
Testing.
Receiving. Over.
And there you go, you heard that little ping there that said it was listening, so you're probably familiar with that. If you're an Amazon Echo user already, you can turn on and off the microphone sounds so that you know when it's listening to you. So why would you want to do this? Well, I'll go over a couple of use cases that I have for this. So I've got a few smart plugs in my house, and the smart plugs that I've got are not HomeKit compatible, which means they don't work on they don't work with Siri and with Apple's Home app. So I can control the lights using my phone or my watch, but I can't control the smart plugs. If I was to, say, turn off, for example, I've got a load of smart plugs behind my desk where I'm sat here. So if I was to, say, turn off the laptop charger, I wouldn't be able to do that with Siri, but I can. Because they work with Amazon Alexa, I can do this via on my wrist via the voice in a can functionality. So if I go back into it, turn off laptop charger. And you heard the pings there to say it's done it, and you may have heard that little click, and that was my laptop charger plug turning off. And I can do the same thing the other way around to turn it on. Turn on laptop charger. And then you heard a few things there. You heard the plug click on, and you heard the laptop itself do the charging sound as well. The calendar is another one, because on the watch, the calendar only goes forward a week in advance. But sometimes I'll be, you know, chatting with friends, or I'll be looking at meetings and trying to arrange something, and I just want to quickly check the calendar on my wrist. Whereas you can't really do that unless you're looking at a week in advance. So if I say to, I'm going to use Siri for this one. If I go with the 6th of September, because I know that there's an event on my calendar at that time, but it is way more than a week in advance. So if I use Siri for a second, what's on my calendar for the 6th of September?
Sorry, calendar on Apple Watch only goes out 7 days.
So that only goes out 7 days, as it said, so it can't tell you. Obviously the phone can, but that's not quite as convenient as just having that available on your wrist. So if I go into voice in a can instead.
Speech on. Start. Image. Speech off. Speech on. Dock. Settings. Voice in a can. Actions. Voice in a can. Speech off.
What's on my calendar for the 6th of September?
Callum, on when Wednesday, the 6th of September, there is one event. At 9 a.m., there's Tech Talk Catch Up.
And there you go. That's our usual weekly Tech Talk production meeting. So, yeah, bit of behind the scenes there, if you're wondering what we do on a Wednesday morning. So, look, this is hardly a life-changing app, I would say, but it does have a few handy little use cases like that, you know, little things that the watch can't quite do from Apple's own, you know, native features. You can sort of expand on that with Alexa. And as I said, reminders do work. So you can set a reminder using this. You'll get several alerts, actually. You'll get an alert from Voice in a Can itself. You'll get an alert from the official Alexa app if you've got that installed on your device. And it will also play the reminder on all your Amazon Echo devices around your house as well. So you can set a reminder on there and there's no missing that reminder, especially if you're in at home. So there you go, that's Voice in a Can, on available on the iPhone and the Apple Watch. You can, as I said, you can use this on the iPhone, but I don't really know why you'd want to be honest. I think it's just as easy to use the official Amazon one and get a few more features on there that you can't get on here, such as, you know, being able to drop in, being able to make announcements and things like that. But just search for Voice in a Can on the App Store. It's £1.99 at the time of this recording. It's a one-off £1.99 purchase. And it's made my Apple Watch just that little bit more useful for me.
Thank you to Callum there for his demonstration of the Alexa on the Apple Watch. Now, I did not know this was possible until we spoke about this a few weeks ago, because smartwatches are still, to some people, quite a new thing, really. So there's always interesting things to discover. I mean, the Alexa thing was definitely a nice surprise for me. But Callum, what's your view on smartwatches? Do you use one? How do you find it?
I have a bit of an on and off thing with mine, to be honest. I think the big use for them is definitely fitness. Like, they're still the best. I think the Apple Watch is the most accessible fitness tracker out there. I know there's accessibility on some things like the Fitbit, you know, via the app, but really the full experience is best on the Apple Watch. But I'm not really a fitness person. So for me, I think it's the, you know, calls are really nice. It's nice sometimes having the buzzes on your wrist instead of, because you can filter out the notifications, which I like. So I can usually tell if I'm wearing my Apple Watch, if my watch buzzes, then it's probably important and I need to have a look at it. If my phone buzzes, it can probably wait. You know, you can set what apps push to your phone and which one goes to your watch as well. So that's really nice. But for me, I just found it a bit limited, especially with some of the quirks, shall we say, that Siri has. But I'm liking this Alexa functionality on that.
I quite like it because I think when you're using digital assistants, I mean, some of them are a bit more functional than others, let's just say. Talking about our great friend Siri, I mean, it's a tricky one, but I love the fitness aspect. I quite like, because I'm into my fitness, I'm into my workouts, my activity, my walks. But I do love the convenience of using your watch to reply to messages, because my phone plays music a lot of the time, no matter what I'm doing, working, cooking, washing up if needed, you know, music always plays on my phone. And one thing I don't like is listening to notifications when I'm checking them and music fading into the background. So what I like is I can check it on the watch. I can control the music playback without the music being interrupted. It's the little things. Like when you're walking, you can check the notification on your watch without stopping, putting your hand in your pocket, checking the notification, pushing your phone back away, locking it. I mean, it's just a lot of it is fast and convenient. And of course, it's arguably the most accessible smartwatch out there, you could say. I mean, the Google Pixel Watch has accessibility, Fitbit to an extent has accessibility outside of it, but it is probably the most accessible smartwatch based on user feedback and user observations. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, although I say I'm not into fitness, I do kind of like the stand reminders, because it gives you a reminder every hour to stand up and move around. And obviously, there's health benefits to that, but I do find when I'm wearing my watch and those reminders pop up, I'll start sort of taking a bit more notice of it, you know, and gives you an opportunity to just wander around, stretch your legs, take a bit of a break from, well, a break from the screen, but I guess give, in our case, give your, I don't know, give your ears a break. It's like,
it's, you know, that, but it's also a break from sitting at a desk. If you're doing a desk job, standing up every hour is important because physically, if you're sitting for 7-8 hours, you need to stretch the legs a bit. And I think that's what I quite like the stand reminders for.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting uses for this. So let us know your thoughts. Do you use an Apple Watch? Do you use some sort of other watch? Because, you know, as we've said, the Apple Watch isn't the only accessible smartwatch out there. So let us know your thoughts. Drop us an email or a voice note, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you were listening last week, you might remember Dave Williams spoke to Drew Mochak, who works at Meta as a technical specialist for WhatsApp. And we return now to part two of that conversation, where they'll be talking about the change to the future of social media and how blind and partially sighted people can get on board with that change.
I think it's The Verge or one of those publications. They do a How I Work series where, you know, leaders in tech talk about, you know, the tools and techniques and the processes they use to be productive and get in the right headspace and all of that. So how about you, Drew? What tools do you use outside of, you know, obviously using WhatsApp, but, you know, what else do you use to get stuff done?
I definitely WhatsApp is a huge productivity booster for me, actually, just in a lot of, like, I use WhatsApp for so many things now, because, like, it's, I mean, obviously just for the instant messaging aspect, but also I share, like, so you can message yourself now. If you go to the new chat, there's a thing, the top contact is you. So you go in there, you can write notes to yourself, or you can send files to yourself. So, you know, that's a way I will, you know, oftentimes if I have like a bug that I need to, you know, reproduce on another device or whatever, I'll send it to myself on WhatsApp and then download it to the computer and open it that way. So like it's really replaced a whole lot of tools that I used to use. Other than that, you know, I would probably, so I like for a lot of my work stuff, I use Thunderbird for you know, when I'm at home, you know, for my email. I like that a lot of and I guess this is where I'm for when I'm not working, it mostly like when I'm working, I use a certain set of tools, but then when I'm not working, I have a bunch of different, you know, stuff I like to do for fun. And so I like to stream, so I use OBS for that. Firebot is really great if you are a streamer. I highly recommend Firebot. It's a very useful tool because it's pretty accessible. It's confusing, it's hard to learn, but it's pretty accessible. And then I like my I have Audient interface, and they which I'll plug them because they've done a lot of work to make the drivers and the firmware application accessible, which is not easy to do. I guess the other thing I would give a plug for is Mastodon. I use that a lot, and in particular, I find the apps for it are really like clean and accessible. I'm on Android, so I use Tusky there, and it's great. It has the custom actions for replying and stuff, which is amazing. And then on Windows, I use Semaphore Social, which is just a really great performant web app. It's very impressive to me how well it's able to handle all of the stuff that goes on there.
How do you think blindness organizations can help raise awareness of accessibility and the importance of inclusive design in technology?
Oh, geez. My main takeaway, I think, for this question is what I would like to see more of. 'Cause I feel like I've seen both sides of this, where I've seen on the one side, I'm, you know, the person making, you know, who shows up saying, oh, here are a bunch of problems with this app that needs to be fixed. And then I also see the other side of the people who need to fix this thing and all the stuff that, you know, where they are coming from and the amount of experience that they have that has led them to the moment to be there and what things that they have to do and why they have to do it and the competing priorities that they have to juggle and balance and all of that. So what I would like to see more of from our end, from the blindness organization end, is to focus the asks and then stick to them. What I see a lot of is, you have all the problems. This is terrible. This is no good. You are doing a bad and do better. Shame on you. Why? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, then they're sort of like, okay, what would you like us to do? And they're like, this, and also this, and this, and that. You know, like, if you get a lot of feedback, you know, for personal feedback, it can sort of be like, you know, I was trying to use your app and it was totally broken because it's not, you need to do better for people with disabilities. Because I had my Aunt Hilda tried to use this and it was just totally, it kept talking at her and she didn't. You can get from that it's broken, but you don't know why. The accessibility organization version of this is you do, you know, like a W3C audit or WCAG audit, and they come back and they're like, you have 69,105 unlabeled buttons, 375,000 contrast issues, and 1,000,000 invalid roles and misfiring ARIA. And most of this will violate the standard. And so please try and fix all of this, preferably by yesterday. Thank you. Have a good day. And that's just not really helpful, right? What I think we could do better about is pulling out for them, these are the things that are really bad that people are experiencing every day that needs to be addressed now, that is within your ability to address now. It's not a hard ask. These are very small things on the scope of the other things that you're doing. You can fit them into the project around the other work. So just do this, just, you know, drill down on this short list, and some of those asks aren't going to be as easy. Some of those asks are going to be really hard, but be really clear. This is what we want. This is why we want it. This is why it is reasonable for you to provide it. And then when they don't do that, continue to hold them accountable for not doing that thing. And just continue to ask, we've been asking for this thing for this amount of time and you have not done this thing. Why is that?
Have you, Drew, encountered any misconceptions or stereotypes as a blind guy working in the tech sector? And what have you had to do to work around those?
Probably. So it's an interesting, I guess it depends on misconceptions from my colleagues or misconceptions from other people who,
well, anyone, yeah. Really just generally. Yeah. So, I mean, I can give you an example. So, you know, some people think that, you know, as blind people, we've got, you know, super hearing, and we've all got super hearing, right? And we're all going to have almost like photographic memories or whatever, right? And that isn't always the case. Or that, you know, to know what somebody looks like, I don't know. Anyway, there's lots of myths out there about blindness generally. I just wondered if you'd encountered any of that working in the tech industry, and what steps you had taken to kind of overcome that.
Gotcha. One thing that's sort of interesting, because I get this from a lot of different people, blind and sighted, is people assume, I guess when talking to me or seeing me for not too long or whatever, that I'm a software engineer, which is interesting to me because, you know, that's sort of a statement of my success if the people think that I do, like, no, because I don't code. I can sort of speak the language, but I don't do it myself. And I wonder what I think maybe part of the reason why is maybe there are, you know, I wonder what the bias is there, if there are a lot of blind people who go into software engineering because that is a field that is, you know, easier to pursue for some reasons. That just for whatever reason that never worked out for me. Just the way my brain works. I'm more of a people talky type of person. So I think that there's an interesting bias that happens at these places where you, in order to, you know, with it's, it can be very difficult to get hired, in general, and so, you know, there's obviously the employment bias against folks with disabilities is pretty well known, like, in general. And so as a result, like, in order to combat that, you sort of have to overqualify, right? So, like, in order to get in, then you have to have like two master's degrees from Cornell University or something. You know, you can't just sort of be like a guy who kind of just sort of schlubbed his way in. That's a lot harder. And so, like, the group of people you get there as a result is a lot more like weighted toward that group of people. And so that's like can be sort of your group of the group of people that you see. So you just sort of assume that, like, that's where, you know, folks like that go.
Yeah, I think I mean, I hear from some blind people that, you know, maybe that their colleagues just kind of get the wrong idea. You know, I mean, NFB famously talk about how it's not our level of eyesight that defines us. It's how other people perceive blindness in terms of, you know, their expectations of what we can and cannot do. And I just wondered whether you could relate to that or you'd encountered any of that in your career.
Yeah. So one bias that I see a lot and from folks who will sort of pass me on is the sort of the phrase that I've sort of get triggered by now and start to hate is when somebody will ask me if I need help. There's sort of two elements to that, because maybe I do need help. Maybe I don't realize that I need help. And so sometimes the answer is yes, and I'll say no, but actually it's yes. But more often than not, what will happen is, like, I'll just be walking along, you know, sort of minding my own business, right? Just sort of like walking along the street, and people will be like, oh, are you okay? Are you doing, can I help you get anywhere? Do you need it? And it's just like, no. It's like, okay. And then they don't necessarily believe it, right? They just sort of follow you. And it's like, okay. And then you have to like make conversation with them to like pretend like it's not a weird sort of situation that's happening. And they're not just like kind of creepily stalking you right now. But yeah, it doesn't happen too often. And I feel like generally the way I have found to sort of combat that, and this is maybe not the most popular answer, but it show, don't tell. If you tell them, yes, I'm fine, I've got it, they won't necessarily believe you. You have to show them that you've got it and not, you know, make too many mistakes. And that's not really fair. You shouldn't have to do that, but it does succeed. I have like empirically noted that as I demonstrate that I am in fact able to walk in a straight line successfully, the people who asked me that before stop asking me that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, actually, I'm relieved if somebody asks me if I need help, because it means they didn't just grab me and take me to where they thought I wanted to go, you know, which is always a very special joy, as I'm sure you'll agree, Drew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely prefer. Well, yeah. Well, so I think that's a West Coast thing. People are more passive aggressive out here. So, yeah. But yes, I've definitely had that experience. Not at work so much, fortunately. But yes, I've definitely had the experience with someone who's like, oh, here, let me take you, and they'll like grab me, take frog march me across the street. Didn't even ask me if I was trying to cross that particular street.
Exactly. So I'm usually relieved to be asked. So, yeah, but in terms of technology, I've had, you know, highly intelligent, highly qualified people will assume that my screen reader is just going to read everything right, and they'll send me some data inside an image, you know. And of course, as you know, the screen reader will, you know, will do a pretty clunky job at trying to, you know, OCR that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then you've got to kind of go back and explain to people, look, yeah, it's a screen reader. It reads what's on the screen, providing that content is accessible. So I think sometimes there is there's a misunderstanding about how our tools work as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. That gets exhausting, to be honest, because, you know, and then this is something I think that Jonathan Mosen did, you know, mention in his thing that did resound with me, was that the, you know, once as a worker in the space, I do 9 to 5, my job is helping WhatsApp be better, then when I go home, I also have to, you know, because I play a lot of video games, and a lot of times the game doesn't work. So then I'm now in the developer's Discord being like, hey, so could you maybe like, and let me try and draw on the skills that I'm using that I have to help you make your product better as a thank you and a you're welcome. And A, they generally don't do any of the things that I'm asking, so that gets frustrating. And then B, also, I'm just like, what? But I thought I was done working. Can I just take a break? That would be great. That would be awesome.
I think there's a Richard Branson quote somewhere where he says something like, you know, there isn't work and not work. There's just life, you know. And I think for those of us who are blind, you know, particularly if you work in technology, it's just while you're awake, you're constantly thinking about this stuff and talking about this stuff.
I mean, that was part of like when I wanted to join, was my thought was like, oh, I use this stuff every day. So maybe I can, since I have to, this is my making my peace with the fact that there's always going to be, you know, like inaccessibility I have to deal with, is that maybe I can find an app that I use a lot, work for them, and get paid to help them make it better. And so that at least then I'm channeling the frustration I have with the inaccessibility of tech in a place that is helpful for everyone, including, you know, also myself at the end of the day.
Right. And I think that's why we make quite loyal employees, right? Because we're making this stuff for ourselves at the end of the day. We want to make it better for our own lives. As we draw to a close, Drew, I wonder if you could just leave us with a little bit of advice for organizations, for startups, for entrepreneurs, innovators, maybe, you know, new tech companies thinking about accessibility and inclusivity. What can those guys do to make sure that they benefit from the creativity and talents of blind and low vision folks? And then also for our listeners, for you know, blind people at home, maybe considering a career in tech. Maybe there's somebody listening this summer who's perhaps about to start at university, maybe study software engineering and is thinking about making their way in the world. What message would you give them as well?
I love this question. I have the same, have had the same answer for many years. It's a very simple answer to the companies and organizations that are looking to do more in the space to help us. Hire more people with disabilities. Very simple, very straightforward. You know what to do. Now do it. We will help you. We will, when we are in your organization, we will, we can enable a lot of change from within to drive the things that need to get done, that you know need to get done, that you just don't have the time for. We have the time for it. We will make it our priority and we will do this for you. We will help you make your organizations better. Hire more people with disabilities. If you are a person who has a disability who is listening to this and you're wondering right now, like, what, you know, I would advise, and you're looking at getting started you know, in a career and this stuff, I would my advice would just be to start. Just, you know, go right now, see what it is that you have and why you think that you would be great. Find something that you want to do, and then figure out how the skills that you need to do that, that will make you happy. And then find other people who are doing that thing, learn from them how they are doing the things that they are doing. And then, you know, put methods to practice. Practice always makes perfect. I know a lot of folks spend a lot of time, a lot of energy on, you know, certifications, and certifications are super important. It's good, but the certification is certifying that you have a particular knowledge. It's simply maintaining to someone that you know stuff. It's a shortcut to telling to work experience, which is showing up, putting in the work every day and demonstrating to people that you have the ability to do stuff. And that is all that people are looking for when they're looking for a resume, when they're looking for people who need to fill these roles. All they're looking, they have a list of things that they're looking for, and that's a wish list of stuff they would like. And then they get back from that a list of people who maybe kind of hopefully sort of fit the criteria people they're looking for based on the stuff that they put out there. And then you interview those people, and then out of those people you try to figure out which is the best team fit according to like what you're looking for. So every, like, it's a, every step of that process is a call and response where you're both just sort of trying to feel each other out and trying to figure out why this role is best for you and why you are best for the role. You know, it's not going to be the perfect fit the first time out of the gate, so don't get discouraged when it's not. But you can still learn from that how to be, you know, people get frustrated by, you know, the whole like, you know, learn from failures and stuff. But every time I did an interview for a place and I didn't get the job, I would sort of, why didn't I get this job? And I, after I did that enough times, I just, maybe it was the pandemic, but I just stopped fearing interviews. And it just became a like, okay, that didn't go very well. Why didn't it go very well? Because it didn't demonstrate this thing that they were looking for. And they asked this thing and I didn't answer it. And it just, you can just sort of analyze it from there. And then you get better and you iterate. And then once you keep learning and improving, you eventually, you only need to hit it out of the park once. And then from there, you just need to demonstrate that you're a good worker, that you're smart, that you know stuff, and that you are, you know, want to be there. Show up with skills and prove that you can do the job. And there's no gatekeeping for that. You can start right now. So if you see something that you think that, oh, I would love to do this, and I think that I could do this, just just do it. And if you think you can't do it, then like see why. And now you have a list of things that you need to learn in order to do that thing and where to do them. But
if you've got something, you know, cling on to it and show it to other people, right? If you've got a skill or a talent, you know, you think you've got something, then believe in yourself, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That is the most important thing. If you, it's a confidence thing. And I don't mean confidence in like a fake confidence that you're projecting, but when you know something and you just say, you know, this is the way it is, then people understand that you know this thing, you demonstrated that, and then they won't question it. And then that is established. And so that's really all the game is establishing to the people who matter to you that you are the person that they are looking for. And there are a whole lot of ways to do that.
Well, Drew, you know, this has been wonderful, and I really appreciate you giving up so much of your time to speak with us here on RNIB Connect Radio. And I'm really delighted that actually we were able to do it in this way rather than just kind of, you know, 10 minutes in the middle of the exhibit hall. I think by, you know, leaving it a couple of weeks, actually, it's really helped the conversation. So thanks once again. If listeners would like to keep across your social media or find out more about some of the things that you're involved in, you mentioned gaming, I think, a while back. How do we do that?
Yeah, so, I had mentioned gaming earlier. You can follow my gameplay at twitch.tv/object_inspace. I play a lot of it. I play The Last of Us. I play a bunch of like narrative games that... single player. I play a lot of, you know, audio games, just a lot of different stuff. I also mentioned my Twitter profile earlier, which I left when Elon decided to fire most of the company, including the entire accessibility team. I like to work for companies that don't fire the accessibility team, even after multiple rounds of layoffs. So I do not use Twitter for that and many other reasons. But you can follow me on Mastodon at freeradical.zone/@objectinspace. I'm really happy with Mastodon. Actually, I've been using it for many years, so it's been really interesting to see the blind community sort of embrace Mastodon. I'm here for it, and I'm very happy about that. But yeah,
sure, just give those links one more time, Drew, just to make sure we got them.
My Twitch, those are probably like the most public ways to find me is my Twitch is twitch.tv/object_inspace. I'm also on LinkedIn. If you want to connect with me there, just search for my name, Drew Mocek, and I am freeradical.zone/@objectinspace if you want to follow me.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
We've had an email come in from David. I think this one's for you, Hubert. He says, "Hello, Tech Talk team. I was very interested to hear Hubert's recent demo on the Habel 1 Braille keyboard. I already have a Focus 14 Braille display, which I occasionally use with my iPhone, but I find I have to type quite slowly for the iPhone to keep up via the Bluetooth connection. And he was wondering how quick the Habel 1 is to type on. So, Hubert, as our Habel 1 expert, have you found that it struggles to keep up sometimes?"
Well, it's funny you actually asked this. So I'm not the quickest Braille typist, Braillist, I think is the operative word. I'm not the fastest Braillist. So for me, it works. It tends to work okay. I can type in fairly quickly and it does a pretty good job. But I have got one of my friends who claims that... and she's an experienced Braillist, and she apparently the Habel 1 cannot keep up with her input. Apparently she types too quick for it. So it has been heard. I've not seen this in action, mind you, but for me personally, as a slowish Braillist, I don't find that a problem myself. But I can't really say much for people who type Braille are probably a lot faster than me. So it just depends, I think, on an individual preference. But I have heard that it can happen with the Habel, but I've only heard it from one person. So how many more people have experienced it? I don't know, but hey, you can tell us on Tech Talk.
I kind of wonder if this is to do with, and I don't know this for certain, but when you use something like a focus, when you use a proper Braille display, the iPhone, if you use grade 2 Braille, then the iPhone is actually doing the Braille translation. So, you know, translating from grade 2 to grade 1. Whereas on the Hable, that translation's happening kind of on the Hable device itself. So it translates it and then sends that to the iPhone, rather than the iPhone having to do the extra work of receiving the Braille combinations and then translating that into kind of normal text, if you like. So I wonder if that could have anything to do with it. I mean, there'll always be some sort of lag with Bluetooth or with any wireless connection, but I would suspect, I mean, I don't know this for certain, but I would imagine that that translation happening locally, if you're a grade 2 Braillist, might give you a little bit of extra speed, maybe?
I think it does. I've tried grade 2 Braille, the Hable one. Now, my grade 2 Braille knowledge is not great, but it's good enough and it does work. And it does speed things up. I think in general, it does speed up your typing, especially with all the other advantages you get. I don't know if the way you're holding the Hable one compared to how you'd have the Braille display, whether that impacts it as well. But as you said, with Bluetooth, you're going to expect some latency, unfortunately, some lag. It's unavoidable. I mean, it's not as bad as it used to be with Bluetooth devices, but it is still there.
Okay. Well, hope that helps, David. And if anyone else has had any experience with this or got any other thoughts, please do get in touch and let us know.
When it comes to buying a computer while being blind or partially sighted, it's always quite a challenge because you also often have to buy a screen reader to come alongside it. Or at least that was the case a few years ago. Now, in this mini-series on Tech Talk, we will explore built-in screen reader options in computers. And we will start our series with Windows. Each Windows laptop comes with a screen reader by Microsoft called Narrator, and that screen reader is already included in the system. So when you buy a Windows laptop and you turn it on for the first time, you can turn on the Narrator screen reader and be able to use the computer straight away. In this episode, we will show you how to start and stop Narrator, and also what happens when Narrator starts for the first time. To turn on Narrator, it's a fairly simple key command. You will need the Windows key, Control key, and the Enter key. Now, we will show you how to find the keys on the keyboard in the next episode. But if you find these three keys and press them, this is what will happen.
Narrator dialog. OK. Button. Alt plus O. Heads up. Narrator keyboard changes. We've updated the Narrator keyboard layout so it more closely matches the experience you may have had with other screen readers. If you want Narrator to tell you what commands are associated with the keys you're pressing, you can turn on input learning by pressing caps lock plus one. To turn it off, press caps lock plus one twice. To learn more, press Control plus Windows logo key plus N to open your Narrator settings and access the online user guide.
So there we go. That is your introductory message. And you do have the OK button. And you are also told how to turn on Narrator input learning mode, which will then allow you to press any key on the keyboard and be told what that key is. So I'll press OK for now to take us to the Narrator home.
Scan. Narrator heading level 1. Welcome to Narrator. This is Narrator home, where you can get help, access your settings, and learn about new features. Narrator is a screen reader that describes aloud what's on your screen, so you can use that information to navigate your device. To start or stop Narrator, press the Windows logo key plus Control plus Enter. Explore the sections below to get started. Quick Start button. Learn the basics of Narrator. Alt. Q.
So this is Narrator home, as mentioned. Now we will quickly show you what's in this dialogue. We won't go through every section, but we will show you what they are.
Narrator guide button. View the complete Narrator guide online. Alt G.
So you've got the Narrator guide, and it does tell you which keys to press to get it.
What's new button. K. Get an overview of new and updated features, Alt, W. Settings, button, customize narrator. Press Windows logo key plus Control plus N to access settings anytime, Alt, S.
So you've got narrator settings, which we will briefly talk about, but this is where you can adjust screen reader settings for certain functions and customize it to your individual needs. Some of these we will show you in the next few episodes.
Feedback button, help improve narrator. Press narrator key plus Alt plus F to give feedback anytime, Alt, F. Show narrator home when narrator starts, checkbox checked, Alt, H.
Now this is where you can uncheck this checkbox, because at the moment by default the narrator home dialog pops up every time you turn it on. So you won't need it to come up every time.
Link, start narrator after sign in.
You can then press this so narrator starts immediately when you've signed into your computer, as explained.
Exit narrator, button, Alt, X.
And you can exit narrator here, or you can press Control, Windows key, and Enter also.
Minimize, button, Alt, M.
You can then minimize the dialog completely to hide it away.
Quick start button.
Then you have the quick start button, which we've been to already. So that is how you start narrator and what happens when you then come to the narrator home dialog, which you can disable. Thank you for listening to the first episode of the narrator screen reader series. We will have more narrator tips and tricks for you in the next four episodes.
Exiting narrator.
That's all we've got time for this week on Tech Talk. Thanks so much for joining us. And do tune in next week, where we will have our very own Dave Williams back with us. Normal service will be resumed. And if you've got any thoughts, comments, questions on anything that we've discussed this week or in any of our programmes, really, as we've said before, get in touch with us, send us an email, or you can record a voice note and attach that to us. That email address, you should know the one by now. We give it every 2 minutes. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Well, until next time, from myself and Hubert, bye for now.
Goodbye.